Marvel's Daredevil Episode 2, Cut Man, is over, but we are just getting started here on post-show recaps. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wiggler. I am joined here by a man who spends most of his nights in a dumpster. It's Kevin Mondeo. Hey, Kevin. Nice to see you all clean.
Yeah, just woke up a few hours ago in that dumpster, and I will be returning later tonight, I guess.
You are homeless right now. We're almost homeless.
Yes, I am.
Getting very close to homeless. Kevin, so good to talk to you about Daredevil Episode 2, which we've just watched. After having watched and recorded episode one of Daredevil, this podcast coming up the day after the first podcast has come up. Granted, we're still very close to this thing, but I think that the verdict is still two thumbs up.
Oh, for sure. Like, speechless, I feel, at the end of the episode. Like, I think we just...
Yeah, well, you and I were, like,
sat there just kind of like...
Just like, wah! That final action scene was pretty ridiculous. Yeah. So two horns up for Daredevil, I guess we should say. Should we grade these episodes on a horn scale?
Horns?
Yeah, 0 to 2 horns.
How horny is it?
How horny is Daredevil? It's
right
like,
now?
He's too horny.
Too horny.
He's too horny right now. And I'm too horny for Daredevil. I'm still crushing hard on Charlie Cox. Right now, I'm shipping Foggy Nelson and Karen.
Yeah, they were so good. Their chemistry is fantastic.
Yeah, that was really... What are we calling them? Farron? Coggin?
Farron? Coggy.
Coggy?
Coggy.
Coggy. Coggy Nelson? No, I don't think we want to say we're feeling coggy. Too horny for coggy.
Sounds
very strange, but I am shipping Foggy and Karen. I really enjoyed that. Although, veering into a little bit of creepy territory with the fact that he's her employer...
I mean,
just like a little bit.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but
he seems mostly harmless, and I think it would be a ridiculous plot twist if it turned out that he wasn't on the level, and I don't see that coming.
Yeah, I don't think
that seems like that will not be happening.
Foggy Nelson's a kingpin.
But if we didn't know that Foggy Nelson was a good dude, that would have some creepiness to it, where he's like, "Hey, don't go home. Stay out all night with me." But we know he's a good guy.
Yeah. But like, she didn't want to go home for the personal reasons and stuff like that. It wasn't even that she didn't want to go home. It's just that, well, she didn't want to go home. It wasn't saying you shouldn't go home so much as like she's she's
traumatized
about going home. So the last thing you want to do is send a traumatized person back into the place that traumatized her.
Yeah. Overall impressions of this episode. What are like broad strokes your feelings on episode 2, Cut Man of Daredevil, which is a very flashback heavy episode.
Yeah.
Kind of Lost-like, right?
Oh God, every time.
Most times.
I feel this episode, I think throughout, I felt was like a little slower, but not in a bad way. It was definitely more character than anything else. Like, they kind of really delved into Matt, you know, as a character, his flashback relationship with his dad, Foggy and Karen. Like, it really was a character heavy episode. And then at the last 10 minutes, they punched me in the face and told me, nope, you're wrong. This is also action-y because it provided one of the awesomest action sequences, which we can talk about later. I don't want to
get
too much into it yet, you know, when we get to it, but like incredible, incredible action sequence at the end.
Yeah. Also, I loved this episode because we got introduced. So I'm crushing hard on Charlie Cox. I'm crushing hard on Eldon Henson, who plays Foggy Nelson. Always been a big fan of Deborah Ann Woll as Jessica, as Karen Page. And above all of them, I have a big place in my heart for Rosario Dawson.
No idea she was in this. She showed up and I was like, is that Rosario Dawson?
Yeah, she's in it, and I believe she's a series regular. So we should be seeing a good amount more of Rosario Dawson's character on Daredevil.
How did we not, like, I try to avoid spoilers, but like, was that out there? That
well, you don't this? you don't work in daily news.
That's true.
You know, once upon a time, Kevin was mostly working as a journalist. You've just completed a stint in comic book marketing.
Yes.
Whereas I've been riding this beat for a little while, so it's like it's literally my job to pay attention to this stuff. But I think other people probably had heard also that Rosario Dawson was going to be on this show. You just dodged a bullet. That's very good for you.
Yeah, it was really cool to see her. I was very excited.
Yeah, she shows up almost immediately. She was great. I really like her character. I think, you know, when you think of Rosario Dawson, for the most part, I think that you tend to think about like super, super tough, badass, gonna kick your ass types of characters.
Yeah.
And I think that she has it in her here as Claire, certainly given what she advises Matt to do to the guy he's torturing at one point. But she's playing more of a down-to-earth character than certainly, you know, like her Sin City character, which is, I think, like the thing that a lot of people think of is
fishnets and guns and shooting.
And this is not that. And in fact, when news came out that Rosario Dawson was going to be joining the cast of Daredevil, no one knew who she was playing. So I'll give you one guess as to who people thought she was playing.
Wonder Woman.
No.
Elektra.
Elektra.
Clearly.
God damn it, Kevin. But yeah.
That was just me saying she should play Wonder Woman at some point.
I believe that part is claimed, but she would be a pretty badass Wonder Woman. But yeah, a lot of people thought that maybe she was going to be Elektra.
That was my instinct when he was asking her name.
Yeah.
He'd be like, my name's Elektra. And I'd be like, oh, snap.
No, that would have been weird. But no, they did a panel at New York Comic Con earlier in the year, and I think that they confirmed there that she was going to be playing a character named Claire Temple, who is, get this, a nurse that works at night.
Night nurse.
That is how they described her.
It's funny because, like, because I didn't know her last name, they didn't say it in this, and my immediate instinct, because when you watch these movies and you're into comic book stuff, you hear someone go, yeah, my name is Claire, I have a mysterious boyfriend, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right. Immediately, I'm like, to the interwebs, like, right. I wanted to, like, research who she could possibly be.
Right.
But that's interesting that she's Night Nurse. That's very, very interesting.
Okay, so this is, you know, we're talking about a character named Night Nurse who is not referenced on Daredevil, the show. Even for me, I have very little familiarity with the character Night Nurse from Marvel Comics outside of, she's a major character in a comic book called Doctor Strange, The Oath. Written by Brian K. Vaughan, who's a tremendous writer, and Marcos Martín is the artist. If you guys don't know Doctor Strange very well, and admittedly I don't either, this is pretty much my only experience with Doctor Strange. It's a great graphic novel that you should definitely check out.
100%.
But Night Nurse is a character in that, and I mean, I don't know how much more you need to know beyond...
She's a nurse at night that takes care of superheroes.
Yeah, like the name is fairly self-explanatory, that she is a nurse. She works at night. She helps superheroes when they are injured. Is there anything more about Night Nurse that you can add context-wise?
Not that... I'm not... like you, I'm familiar with her because of Doctor Strange and like a few other... I think Brian Michael Bendis uses her in some stuff, but like... It's interesting because she's mainly known for Doctor Strange. I'm like, oh, connection. You know, obviously, like, I feel like...
Because of Doctor Strange movie.
Because of Doctor Strange movie. And, I mean, you have Rosario Dawson, very familiar with the movie scenes.
Yeah, so. you would like to think that, you know, the Marvel Universe, everything's connected. It's certainly possible that characters from Daredevil could be popping up in some of these movies coming up. So, you know, you probably don't hire Rosario Dawson without... thinking about that at least. So who knows? That would be cool if she showed up in Doctor Strange or another thing. And then also I think that Claire Temple is a character that exists in Marvel as like a minor character, but isn't Night Nurse in the comics. And I don't know what Night Nurse's name in the comics is, but
Night last name Nurse.
Yeah, I think that is correct. But yeah, so that's cool. That's a cool little Easter egg for fans is having a little bit of Night Nurse here. But before we fall too far down the Night Nurse rabbit hole. Let's talk about the actual episode, but it does begin with Rosario Dawson's character pretty much. It, you know, begins with a kid who sees Matt Murdock in a dumpster covered in blood, all caught, cut up, not doing well, gasping for breath, obviously very injured. And that's a very interesting way to start an episode, given where we left him in episode one. He was about to, like, go kick some ass.
Yeah.
I guess the ass got his ass
kicked.
Yeah,
his ass got kicked.
The ass kicked back.
Yeah. back hard.
What was your take when you saw Matt in such dire straits?
It was, like, an interesting cut, and I was curious. Like, well, I feel like just, you know, having watched a lot of TV and movies, whenever you start an episode like that, your brain just goes, oh, this is going to be a flashback-y episode, hey. Because, like, I feel like... normally you see that, then they'll do a cut to and be like, 3 hours ago.
Yeah. They didn't do
but
that.
But they did not. And this show, you know, credit due here. It defies a lot of expectations. We mentioned from the first episode when Karen was being attacked, we expected instinctually Daredevil to show up or something. But no, she got herself out of it. Same thing here. You expect this to be like flashback to see how we got here. But through exposition, they talk about it. But I think that's really great that they're defying what you think is going to happen because of what you've seen before.
Yeah, I mean, we miss a huge action scene.
Yes.
You know, he does go after the kid who's kidnapped at the end of the first episode. Uh-huh. He gets ambushed because this was obviously the plan that was hatched on the United Alliance. Is that right? I don't know. Allied Union or something.
United... No, wait. I think it's United Alliance.
Whatever. The bad guys.
The bad guys.
They had hatched their plan. Like, we're going to deal with Daredevil. And I would guess that this was to lure him out. And he just gets his butt whooped and we don't even have to see it. I thought that's an interesting choice. But I mean, they certainly didn't skimp in the action department in this episode.
Yeah, but sometimes it's also...
But I thought that was cool. It very easily could have been 3 hours earlier.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they didn't go that route.
It's the action you don't see sometimes, too. Like, that, I feel like, it's storytelling-wise, you don't need to see that action sequence. Seeing the after effect is very powerful, and then later on, you know, you it's not like, ah, ha-ha, viewers, we cheaped you out of an action sequence. It's like, no, we're going to reward you with a really awesome one later. But I think that's a very good storytelling technique.
The guy who said that was very nefarious sounding. Ah, ha-ha, you cheap viewers.
He's also from the 1930s.
Yeah, we're being cheapo depots on the action sequences.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, as you're twirling your mustache. No, that's ridiculous. This episode is called Cut Man. We have a cut man in a garbage dumpster, so that seems like the literal description of the episode, but also Cut Man, you know that I'm not up to date on the sportses, but I looked this up. Cut Man in boxing is the guy who, like, heals you up ringside, who patches you up. So we'll see Matt Murdock do that for his dad in this episode, who, in a very real way, even though, battling Jack is not going to make it out of this episode alive, he is, in a way, healed by his inspiration from his son.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to see Matt healed up by Claire, Nurse Claire, in this episode. So I think it's a pretty cool layered title for this episode. So I like that.
Yeah, I wasn't too sure what the title meant.
There's a guy who's severely cut up.
Yeah.
So we get the first scene here with Rosario Dawson. The boy who first discovered Matt in the dumpster comes and grabs her, shows her that there is a body in a dumpster. That is a scary sight. So they bring
him. But they do live in New York. So.
They bring him. Listen, this doesn't happen too often. It happens sometimes. In certain corners, certainly, probably not a ton in Hell's Kitchen anymore. But in this Hell's Kitchen, which has been ravaged by the Avengers, it makes sense.
By the Chitauri, not the Avengers themselves.
By the Chitauri, yeah, that is correct. But I enjoyed seeing Claire get to work. You know, instantly, you know, she's got like her doctor gloves on. And she's checking his wounds and checking his eyes, and there's no reaction. There's no nothing. So she determines that he's blind, and either he is, you know, recently blind, or he is like super comfortable being blind. And we will learn that he is super comfortable being blind. She's like, obviously he's in such dire straits that she needs to call 911. And as soon as she does, of course, he lurches.
Well, yeah, because he probably heard. I mean, like, again, with his hearing, he probably heard it, which would have shocked him.
And that, yeah, that was enough to be like, wake up.
Yeah. No,
don't do that.
Yeah, I was going to say with the him checking, her checking his eyes and realizing he's blind too. We talked, like, I feel like in the first, very, very first podcast, the preview one, how Matt Murdock's secret identity sort of not always best kept is a problem sometimes where it gets exposed.
Yeah.
This is, I feel like, there we go. Cause like, not there we go, but like, clearly, all she has to do is see a sign or hear about a blind lore and be like, "Oh, that guy. Okay, cool. I know who Daredevil is now."
Yeah, it's not gonna take much legwork for Claire to figure out who Daredevil is eventually. And I get the sense that like he probably isn't going to go through extreme lengths to hide his
identity at this point.
From her,
yeah,
which is interesting. I mean, no one knows his secret up to this point in his personal life. On the show, as far as we know, of the people that we've met so far. But I like the idea of him having a confidant in his corner in this way. And I think, you know, we had mentioned on the preview show, or you had mentioned rather, that there are times when Foggy Nelson knows that Matt Murdock is Daredevil. In the comics, sometimes it's not such an open thing between them. Currently on the show, it is not an open thing at all. It seems to be a
big
secret.
Well, he's just starting out too. So.
Yeah, he's just starting out. I feel like it's good to have somebody that he can riff on. And I guess, you know, he could go back to the priest, we could have it that way. That seems not as interesting as having somebody that he can have actual scenes with and really confide in. So I hope that that's the dynamic that's being set up here.
And I'm curious about your own opinion, because, and honestly, the listeners, I would love to hear some discussion about this. The idea of the superhero secret identity need to be kept a secret. It's been a thing in comics for so long, but I personally, at this point, I think it's maybe changed a bit, where, like, it's good, like you said, it's good to have someone who knows your secret identity. And, you know, like, let's take the Flash, for example, Flash versus Arrow. Like, Arrow is very like, I don't want anyone to know my identity, despite the fact that a lot of people do. Whereas Barry Allen in the Flash TV show, awesomely, just kind of like, woohoo, I'm Barry. Like, right. He's revealed it to so many people now that he's close with. And I think that's interesting and cool. But I know, like, a lot of people
In the Marvel universe, in the movies, there aren't a ton of secret identities.
There's not. Know? I mean, like, Tony gave his away. Everybody knows
who
Steve Rogers is.
At the end of the first movie, everyone knows who Steve Rogers
Thor
is.
Thor is not really
Thor's
a secret identity.
Thor. You know, there's not a ton of that going on.
And even Black Widow got outed at the end of Cap 2, so people know who she is now.
Like, my understanding is that with Ant-Man, some secret identity stuff is going to come into play for that. But other than that, you know, secret identities really aren't a thing.
Think it's a thing of the past?
I don't know. I think it hasn't needed to come up with the Marvel stories. I mean, you know, I think with Daredevil, it's actually an interesting, almost fresh dynamic in the context of modern Marvel live action that I'm pretty into it. I like the idea of there being like this vigilante that's running around New York fighting crime, you know, preventing chaos from happening however he can from behind a mask, and nobody really knows who it is. That's not something that we're seeing a ton of in Marvel, so I'm good with it. I'm fine with it, and I think I don't know, I like it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, but like you said, I think having a confidant is good. Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see how that plays out as it goes on.
Yeah. So like we said, this is an episode that has a lot of flashbacks going on, and we get one here when Matt kind of comes to, and he's like stumbling around and he's saying, you can't send me to a hospital because they'll kill everybody in the hospital to get to me, the men who did this. And, you know, he's lost a lot of blood. And then we flash back to Matt, who is dealing with another injured Murdoch, but it's his father. He starts off by watching his dad on TV. He's watching his dad lose in the ring. As we've already learned, this is a common occurrence. Battling Jack, Murdoch loses more often than he wins. When he comes back, Matt serves as his cut man. He serves to, you know, help stitch him up and everything. But I guess he doesn't always do such a great job because he's a little shaky.
Well, he's also, I mean, yeah, your dad's coming in, there's blood, there's cuts, and like, you know, you're trying to do well, so it's difficult.
And this is pre-accident.
He's also young, yeah.
This is pre-accident, too.
Young kid, yeah.
This is before he's blinded. You know, his dad is like, it's my face, you can't mess this up, so drink this. So he gives him like some scotch to cool his nerves. How old is Matt Murdock in this moment? Did they say how old he was when he was blinded? I think that they said 9, maybe.
Maybe
does that
9
sound
or
right?
10 sounds about right.
Young.
Yeah.
And so his dad is giving him booze.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever drink with your dad underage? Did you have that relationship with him at all?
Yes. I guess it's the easiest way to say
it. Did you not say more?
Yes. I mean, I don't think, I mean, at this point,
I know your dad's listening to this right now.
But no, yes. I mean, like, it's a culture thing. Like, when I go to, I mean, my family's from Guyana in South America, and, you know, they don't have as much stringent drinking rules there. But yeah, I've definitely drank with my dad.
Like, at what age? Like, when did you do that for the first time? This young?
Not much older than Matt.
Jeez! What a badass.
I mean, it kind of worked out. I mean, like, we knew what to do when drinking and not. I didn't lose my mind in college. It's like some people who kind of, like, have that, you know, reserved atmosphere. It's a weird thing, but, like, I don't know. I don't want to get my dad in trouble.
Your dad's not going to get in trouble. No, it's going to. Everybody call Mr. Mahadeo. Just call him out.
Yeah, no, I was pretty young, and, like, you know, I wasn't, like, heavily drinking, but I was like, oh, okay.
I never drank with my dad. I mean, my dad doesn't drink, period, so that would be why, but, like,
I still drink with my dad. I go back home, and, you know, for Christmas and stuff, we have drinks.
My dad drinks, but he doesn't drink often. He orders a Bailey on the rocks. because he's an adult baby and he just drinks a chocolate milk.
Yeah, that's basically like an adult chocolate milk.
He's an adult child. He's drinking alcoholic chocolate milk. I mean, it's delicious.
It is.
Diversified.
Yeah.
But I was just kind of stunned. Like, this kid is so young. He's just drinking with his dad. It's so ridiculous. But I guess it's a thing. Yeah.
I don't recommend it for everyone, obviously. I'm not saying
we're not in a position of recommending anything to anybody other than a couple TV shows.
Right? Yeah.
But no, it was interesting. And the conversation that they have is pretty interesting, too, about sometimes, you know, even when you get knocked down, you can still win. It ain't how you hit the mat. It's how you get up. So
it's very reminiscent of a why do we fall, Master Bruce?
I know. Yeah. So that we may pick ourselves up. Mr. Wayne. Yeah, so it's you know, I think that's going to be the line that's kind of reverberating throughout the episode. This idea of, like, you're going to get put down on your butt from time to time. Like, you're going to get knocked down. You're going to get your butt kicked. You're going to get your face smashed in. But it doesn't mean you've lost. And the only thing that matters is what you do after that happens. Like, do you stay on the ground or do you get back up? And that's, like, very literally what is happening in this episode here with, you know, Matt has, I mean, suffered a very serious beatdown.
Yes.
He's, you know, we're going to find out that, like, he's got, like, bruised ribs, broken ribs. He's got, he's going to need to, like, get his, like, lung punctured so he can breathe.
It was, yeah.
A lot of horrible stuff. And he's still going to be able to get up and go ahead and do what he does at the end of this episode.
That's what heroes do, yeah.
Which is crazy. So that's cool. I like that as kind of the theme of this episode. So that's that flashback. Then we flash back to the present, where Karen is working long hours. She's working after hours at Nelson and Murdoch. And Foggy apparently is there too, and he is singing the Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah, which is pretty great.
And he sounds amazing. That's what he wants me to say, right?
He wants you to say, you sound amazing.
Yeah, the correct answer is yes, you sound amazing.
He is a very model of a modern...
It's not very good. He's not great. I wouldn't quit my day job if I
as a lawyer. That. Yeah, I would suggest he sticks with that. Yeah,
even that's not going very well. So maybe quit your day job and find something else, but don't go
into. They've had one client so far.
Yeah, don't try out on Broadway. Probably not good. But I just love, like, Karen's awkwardness there, being like, you know, I'm still here, right? Yeah. And he comes out, he's like, did you hear that? Like, yeah, I heard that. No, it was very, very funny. And this is where we get into a little bit of Karen basically being like, you know, why are you here? Why are you working so late? And her saying, like, I can't go home. You know, I just can't go home right now. And Foggy says, all right, well, look, we can't stay here. We don't have enough money to keep the lights on past midnight. So let's hop a few bars and we'll just not think about anything. And Karen is a big fan of not thinking. And they're going to try and call Matt, but he is obviously unavailable.
Because he
is bleeding out. But that will pay off in a very funny scene a few scenes from now. So let's cut back to Nurse Claire's. Matt is, you know, he had passed out again, I guess, and he wakes up on the couch and he doesn't know who this woman is. She's the lucky girl who pulled you out of the garbage. I'm sure not the first time that's happened for him.
Definitely not the last, I feel like. I feel like this is going to happen a few times.
Yeah, he's going to probably, like, he should mark some dumpsters.
This is my dumpster.
Yeah, he should, like, go around starting, like an Instagram account for, like, best dumpsters NYC.
Oh,
and, like,
God,
go
a
around,
daredevil Instagram?
Yeah, and he's just, like, grading each dumpster on, like, cleanliness.
Comfortability.
Yeah, like, prime location.
How like, the distance you can fall and still be landing comfortably inside
the
dumpster.
Yeah, I feel like that'd be good. I follow on Instagram, there's a dollar slice pizza reviewer who reviews every single dollar slice.
Is it
in
you?
New York.
Or
it's
you?
Not. It's not me. I wish it was me. It's a great idea. But, like, grades everything on, like, crust and cheese and sauce and stuff like that. And there, so it's, like, a graded scale on those three things. Then, like, a little bit of a detailed review. And then, like, a recommend yes or no.
And you want this for dumpsters?
And I want this for dumpsters. And I want Daredevil to be in charge of the social media. I think it's an idea, and I think we should look into it. But let's not look into it now. Let's talk about Daredevil some more, and not his dumpster.
And not the dumpsters.
Well, we'll talk about some dumpsters later on. There's a great dumpster scene later on. But yeah, so he has, He's not thrilled that Claire has seen his face. That's not awesome. But things are, and she also says, I love that. She says, by the way, your outfit kind of sucks.
Yeah.
He says, it's a work in progress. I like that little meta moment of the people who first saw the ninja suit being like, what? Ninja suit? So I like that that's acknowledged on the show. So she's describing his injuries. He has 2 or 3 broken ribs, probably a concussion, a puncture wound that's probably a knife wound. And these are just the things that she knows about. She's also determined that either he's blind or in way worse shape than she knows. And he says, do I have to pick one? And so she's asking, like, how did you end up this way? And he says, the less you know, the better. But she, you know, she's no dummy. She knows, like, he's got knife wounds. Things are probably not great. She stopped bleeding for now, but she can't determine how bad things are internally without some x-rays. But he is very adamant, no hospitals, even though she is... She's concerned about, like, somebody dying on her couch.
Yeah, and as anyone should be, I mean, in these circumstances. I am constantly concerned about people just dying on my couch.
It's a fair concern.
Including myself. I don't want to die on my couch.
Don't die on a couch. Don't die in a dumpster. Try not to die for a long time. At least until we're
life through. Life goals. Do not die for a long time.
Yeah, that would be ideal. And so they trade names, or at least Claire offers her name. Matt refuses to give up his. And so she calls him Mike.
Which, not that far off.
Not that far.
I mean, honestly, if you're going to guess a guy's name, you could probably guess, like, Matthew is pretty popular. Michael is right there. I think Michael and Matthew were 2 of the most popular male names.
And, like, the other thing is, like, she could, like, see, like, some advertisement for Nelson and Murdoch somewhere, and, like, if she, like, reads, like, it's Matt Murdoch, she'd be like, Matt? Mike? Yeah. Oh, that's totally him. It's that guy. Like, yeah, not that she's gonna have a hard time figuring out who he is, but it's just, like, another thing, like, oh, that's I was close.
Yeah. I almost got you.
I was almost there. But I guess it's named after a guy she used to date, Mike. I wonder if there's any Easter egg-ish.
Yeah, I'm waiting. Again, same thing. It's like you said, every name, everything, you're just kind of like, whoa, is this a reference?
Yeah, so we'll find out. From here, there's, like, a very quick flashback that's just to Matt post-accident, unable to see, really freaking out, trying to tear the stuff off of his face, like the bandages off of his face.
And I really like that scene a lot. I thought it was very well done, very intense, but, like, and emotional. Again, they do a great job building the bond with him and his dad.
Yeah, I think that they did a really good job with that. And again, like, just good kid acting.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good kid acting. This is just a quick flashback, though. It was a good scene. I liked it. But we get right back to the present, and we see that he's in worse shape in the present than he was in the past, arguably, because he's waking up. He can't breathe. She has to pop his lung, like we talked about before.
Which is just intense.
Intense.
Like, I can't... Like, that type of brutal injuries.
You're not going to see this in a Marvel Studios movie.
You're not. And we've heard people kind of mention this, that, like, it's something that we've just never seen before that Marvel has done. And this is very accurate, just from the grittiness and the realism and the violence. The violence, especially.
Yeah, oh, the violence.
The violence.
Totally. And so we get that, and Claire basically saying, like, listen, you got to, like, if we're not doing the no hospital thing, like, if that's what's going on, you got to, like, tell me something. You got to give me a reason, because I keep, like, fantasizing what I'm going to say to the cops if you do expire on my couch, and every version I'm coming up with ends with me in handcuffs.
Yeah, 100%.
She's
right. She's 100% valid. Like, get it together, Matt. Like, yeah, give her
Mike.
Yeah, Mike, sorry.
Come on, Mike Murdoch. You got to tell me what's going on here. So that's really funny. But we find out the story. And so this is where, like, they're, like, kind of just summing up what we missed. And again, just an interesting choice that this sounds exciting. He says they kidnapped a boy, the Russians. They've been running a human trafficking ring out of Hell's Kitchen. They took over when the Italians folded up. And 2 days ago, the Russians, they pulled a kid out of the back of a van and beat his father while he watched. I knew the kid would be alive until they took him out of the city, so I tracked the Russians down to a warehouse not far from here. I thought I was being smart with how fast I found them, but it turns out I wasn't. They were waiting for me, and I walked right into it. I've been making their lives difficult lately, so they've been coming after me. That all sounds like stuff that would have been awesome to see, but I think kind of smartly we didn't need to see
it. Yeah, it wasn't necessary, and, you know, it's a storytelling technique. Like, you have to start... You don't start at the very, very, very beginning all the time. You know, you start when the story needs to start. And I think in this case, the story needs to start here, and we get to find out what happened, you know, when he explains it, and I think it worked really well.
Yeah. So she's basically figuring out, okay, so you're a vigilante, but you're blind. I'm like, eh, there's other ways to see. You know, there's, you know, I can do stuff.
Yeah. I'm doing all right. Yeah. Are you? Like, you found you in a dumpster.
Yeah, doing very good. And he's, you know, she's like, well, you don't seem very good at what you're doing. He says, you're catching me on an off night. This seems like kind of par for the course with Matt, though.
Yeah.
He's just getting his ass kicked. But we've seen what he can do, and we see what he's going to do. So not the worst thing. But here's something that he can do, even beaten up, even in terrible condition, is he can smell your cologne.
Yes, this is what we're seeing. We've seen him use his, like, you know, the hearing and stuff like that. We've got a good look at how that works. So in this case, we finally get to see one of his other, like, senses heightened, which is the sense of smell. But, like, and this is what we mean. This is how you do the superhero-ness of it.
It's the smell.
Yeah, it's
it's the smell.
Yes. Where's that from? I know this.
It's Agent Smith.
Yes.
Anyway, carry on.
The human smell. But he can smell the guy's cologne from, like, the third floor, which is the superhero version of just basically having really good sense of smell.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you're seeing more of how his powers are starting to work. Like, you get the hearing, you get the smell. I'm curious what they end up doing with the touch. But, like, you can kind of see it. His ability to fight, honestly, is sort of a extension of his ability, his balance, his, you know, these things all stem from his powers. So
yeah.
His super smell, the super smeller, is something that we get to see finally at work here.
It must really suck when somebody farts around Daredevil. I hate to be crude, but I'm just
if Matt Murdock lived with you, it would be a problem.
Oh, come on! Throwing me under the bus like that. That's not nice. That's not fair. Anyway, so he smells like discount cologne and premium cigarettes. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, that's not a good
mix
of
smells.
That doesn't
sound like
a great smell. Which, clearly a trade-off, right? If he's buying discount cologne, it's because he's spending too much money on premium cigarettes.
He can afford the cigarettes, he can't afford the cologne. I guess it's one or the other. He's chosen the premium cigs. But he says, you'll smell him soon enough. He really likes that cologne. That's funny. I like that. And she's like, how are you doing this? What is this? How can you smell a guy who's on the third floor? He says, there's some things I haven't told you about me just yet.
It makes me wonder. It always is curious. Like, and I think it works okay in this, but, like, if you live in that world at this point, kind of like if you live in the world of, like, you know, the DC Comics or Marvel, like, how are you shocked by anything?
Yeah.
Like, how are you doing this?
Well, look, I think the more that he informs her, like, the more she sees with her own two eyes, it's probably, like, the less, you know, unbelievable it gets.
Right.
More believable it gets. I also like how she says, like, well, you're very good at taking a beating. He says, that part I got from my dad.
Yeah.
That's really nice. And so we go from that to flashing back once again. Again, tons of flashbacks in this episode. To battling Jack, finding out that he has some boxing coming up with Crusher Creel.
Yep, with the Absorbing Man.
The Absorbing Man. Which I will say, like, I kind of wish that we had at least seen that. Like, I like the way that they did it. Don't get me wrong. But just because they do have Crusher Creel already in the Marvel Universe, already cast, already on a show, I would have liked to have seen him pop up here. I think that would have been cool. But just knowing that he's the one that he's being matched up against is pretty cool. But and even Battling Jack is like, yeah, oh my God, I've been trying to fight this guy for so long. And they're like, oh yeah, it's going to be so cool when you lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you go down in the fifth. Because it's 3-1 that you're going the distance, and we are going to be picking up a hefty chunk of change by doing this. And Battling Jack's like, I don't want to do that.
I don't want to.
And, you know, he's finally kind of talked into doing it after he's sort of, you know, threatening these guys. Like, well, if you want to step into the ring right now, they're like, yo, hey, listen, we're buttering your bread. Don't get angry right now. We're going to make you a very wealthy man. Like, it'd be a shame for, like, you not to be able to take care of your kid.
Yeah, how's that kid of yours? The usual, you know.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, I'm sure that Battling Jack doesn't realize quite how gifted his son is, But Matt hears all of this.
Yes.
So at this point, the senses are already really there, which I guess we kind of rushed through it, but in that hospital flashback scene,
the hearing is picking up first one really quickly. Really get going.
So even here, he is hearing that his dad is going to drop. So that's kind of discouraging for him. He's not thrilled to hear it. In the present day, back at Claire's apartment, Matt needs to get some weaponry to deal with this heavily cologned man. All she has is a knife for vegetables.
A vegetable knife.
That's all she's got?
I know. What life is she leading? Is she only eating vegetables? Maybe she's a vegetarian.
Maybe she's a vegetarian. I feel I would almost even prefer a fork in that situation to a vegetable knife.
I mean, if you're in that situation, grab both. Just a fork in one hand, vegetable knife in the other, and go at it.
Or tape a bunch to your knuckles and be vegetable knife Wolverine.
If you had multiple vegetable knives, I just meant a bunch of forks. Which would be...
That would suck. I'd hate to be on the receiving end of that. He's not going to need it, though. Claire's like, listen, bro. Just chill out. You've gotten a punctured lung. I don't need you to go fighting this guy right now. I got this. And she does. She does a pretty good job here. He shows up. It's this guy who claims to be Detective Foster with the 65th Precinct. And he says, some dickhead in a black mask shot up a bodega. Not for nothing. This show with the language.
Oh, yeah. The priest would be very upset about
the language. We're dropping a D head. We're dropping several times people saying shit on this.
It's Netflix, man. They are it's nothing you'd see in a Marvel Studios film, really.
Definitely PG-16.
Yeah.
You know, it's I think I saw one of the Marvel people talking about it. It's like PG-16. It's like a step between PG-13 and R, for sure.
Yeah, maybe that might be a new rating.
It's like PG-13 plus.
Yeah.
so he walks away. She gives him a good enough answer that he's going to walk away. But turns out he doesn't believe her. He's going off to call somebody, and Matt immediately is like, he doesn't believe you. Now I've got this. So he steps out in the hall. He takes a fire extinguisher off the wall and drops it. He times it perfectly so that it drops, falls on quote unquote Detective Foster's head and knocks him clean out and smashes his phone at the same time.
I love that. Just watching him because again, he's using his hearing and stuff, and he's just with the fire extinguisher following him around in a circle as he descends the stairs, waiting for him to hit the bottom and then drop. It was great. I really, really loved that. It was an effective use of Daredevil's powers beyond just he fights people and he can hear them lie. That was very, very clever and very cool.
Yeah, basically he's a badass.
Yeah, and that's one of the defining badass moments for him, I think.
Yeah, it's cool. So he's gonna need this kid Santino, the guy who found him in the garbage to begin with. He needs his help bringing Detective Foster to the roof. Why do we need him on the roof? Less chance of people hearing him scream. Which is a very Jack Bauer thing to say.
It's very Jack Bauer moment. Just to I'm gonna torture him so badly.
there's a lot of Jack Bauer to Daredevil in this episode. I feel he's running up walls and beating people out.
It took place in 24 hours. There's a lot going on.
Less than 24 hours. So we go from that, which is a very intense thing, to a more. I don't know if I want to say totally lighthearted, but more lighthearted than what we are dealing with, which is going to be Foggy and Karen at the bar at Josie's. Is Josie's a bar from the comics?
Oh, man.
You don't know.
That one I don't know.
Okay, maybe that's it is. Maybe it is. Yeah, if any of you guys know, let us know. But we are going to – this is where Foggy gets to drink for free, right?
Yes. No.
Oh, but come on. Let's agree to disagree on that. Yeah. Oh, God. I love Foggy Nelson.
He's great. Yeah, and especially this scene, their chemistry is so good. This is kind of what's starting the Coggy shipping going on here.
Yeah. But again, I'm going to say with the Coggy thing, I'm feeling a little creeped out if I don't like Foggy so much and if I don't have knowledge from the fact that he is a beloved character in the comics. I'm feeling a little creeped out when he's saying I've been seeing you look at me you're kind of falling in love with me, right? That's why you're staying after hours. I'm not looking, but just let me live in this world, please, where I think you're in love with me. It's a little tiny bit creepy, but
I mean,
I guess he's also he just comes off as totally harmless.
Yeah, he's the goofy friend, the buddy. You know those guys. Heck, I've been that guy. You know, the goofy friend who's just there and, you're harmless and, you joke around. And I don't think he means anything.
I think the only thing about it that creeps me out. It's not the delivery. It's not anything. I think that he's very charming. I think that he's, you know, I like his moves quite a bit. And if I'm Karen Page, I'm responding.
Yeah.
I'm picking up what he's putting down, except for the fact that he's her employer.
Right.
That's the thing that's just a little weird for me.
That I get. Like, you know, I'm not saying like, I'm not trying to say like, you know, a guy hitting on a girl can't be creepy or bad. It's definitely can be creepy or bad. I just think they're friends. They're establishing a relationship with each other. You know, I don't think it's so bad with him, but the employer-employee thing.
That's just like, it's a little
problematic. However, he's barely an employer.
willing to forgive it. They both seem pretty cool with each other, and they both just seem pretty cool generally. So I'm pretty happy with that. For one thing, they can drink the eel, apparently.
Yes. Yes. Now, is there a whole eel, a baby eel? What is going on?
You're the one,
there?
You're the drinking expert, man. You've been drinking since you were 6 years old. You tell me.
I think it's like, we've seen there's like small, tiny eels, but like you hear eel, you think the big, giant thing, which obviously can't fit in that bottle. But I think, yeah, maybe there's like a slimy little eel. I'm used to, you know, tequila worm and scorpion and crap in there.
What is the deal with the tequila worm?
From what I understand, that's actually not that much of a thing. It's become a thing now because it's such a tourist attraction, but like, that's generally not an actual thing, that they don't actually have worms in the bottom of tequila bottles.
Why do they do that?
I don't know. Something about like, you can tell if the tequila is good or not, if the worm dies.
Oh, really?
Something like that. Like, yeah. If any expert drinkers are out there who can explain.
Yeah, explain to us the eel and the worm.
Yeah, I would please love, do. I'm very curious about
that. I'm a drinker, but I'm a beer drinker, so I don't really encounter too much of the hard stuff.
Yeah.
So I
don't mind hard liquor. Tequila is a bit strong. But you know,
is that what they were drinking here? Were they drinking tequila?
I don't honestly know what they were drinking.
I thought they were drinking.
It was pretty dark.
I thought they were drinking some bourbon type stuff, but I don't know. Anyway, she doesn't want to go home. She's, you know, she can't get the dead guy Danny. She can't get the blood out of the carpet. It looks like somebody spilled a wine bottle, and then she's still freaking out about the man who broke into her apartment and tried to kill her. There's a dent in the wall where he bashed her head in. So yeah that would
that's,
freak me out too.
It's pretty traumatic.
You know, it's actually the levity of this scene aside, when we get to this stuff, you know, it's, listen, I'm lucky that I haven't had to encounter something like that before personally, but I'm sure that many people have encountered situations like this, if not exactly like this. And it's just that until you live that, I'm sure you don't like think about those details in that way of like, go, like, imagine like going back to your home and like having like a hole in your wall that's the shape of your head because it was created by your head. That's really messed up.
Yeah.
And I feel like it, just like the way that she describes it, paints a really vivid picture that like I kind of like got goosebumps a little.
Oh, for sure. Like whoa. It's like what you just said. Like, you never really think about it. And then when she explains it, it's just kind of like, oh man, you understand and you get it. And again, I credit to the acting, because you really feel for it. You really believe it, you know. And it would be traumatic and disturbing and messed up.
Yeah. So we go from there. They have decided at this point, well, all right, if you're scared of your apartment, we don't have to go back to your apartment. We could stay out all night. Let's do that. Seems like a great choice.
Well, alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yes, so. Indeed. Indeed. So let's go to the rooftop.
Because yes. The rooftop scene. Let us go to the rooftop where they cannot hear us scream.
The rooftop scene is awesome. This is before he wakes up. This is before Detective Foster wakes up. She's like, what if he's not really asleep? What if he's faking it? He's like, nah, he's not. I got this super hearing and super senses thing. I don't know if I told you, but I got that. I can tell he's asleep. He's out cold. And so she is talking to him, and he's like kind of wondering like, why did you back me? Like, why have you gone out of your way to do this? And she basically says, I'm a nurse at an emergency room. And a few weeks ago, some cops brought in three men who were robbing tourists. Apparently a man in a black mask took issue and stepped in, and I counted 9 broken bones between them. A few days later, EMTs brought in a 19-year-old waitress. Some guy she knew had waited for her and attacked her in an alley. She screamed, and the man in the black mask heard her and saved her life. Word's getting around about you, and I want to believe in what you're doing. I really do, but, like, tying this guy to, like, what are you going to do? Like, what am I about to see? And he says to her, his answer to all of that is, I know you're afraid. You can't give in to the fear. If you do, men like this win. Is that an acceptable answer? Is that like a good answer to that? Like whole, like, I don't know about this.
This is a pretty big debate. I mean, yeah. You know, we see it on a grand scale political level, whether or not, you know, torture is acceptable or not. So I don't know. It's hard to get into because I'm like, I don't want to get hate now.
Whatever. You don't get into the politics.
I mean it
in terms of, is that like an acceptable answer for what she's looking for? It's like, to me, it just kind of strikes me as like, but come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
He's a bad guy.
He's a bad guy. I'm a good guy.
They're trafficking, you know, young children.
If he said it like that, he said like, this guy is trafficking children and I need to get the information out of him so that I can stop them from trafficking children, I'd be like, oh, sure. Yeah. How can I help? But I feel like just like sort of like the esoteric, heady answer of, I know you're afraid. You can't give into the fear. Which is granted very comic booky, so yeah. I get why that's the direction.
But you also have to consider, I don't know, there could be a psychological effect of saying like, oh yeah, you know, it's because that gets into like, oh, torture someone for information type thing versus it isn't necessarily about the torture. It's about, I get you're afraid, but you know, you can't let the fear conquer you in a situation. It's more attacking her emotion, which you can kind of placate, I guess, as opposed to a moral and ideological and philosophical argument. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's kind of like going after the part that you can do something about and maybe, you know, kind of like convince someone as opposed to trying to make a moral argument, which is very difficult.
Fair enough. So let's go to another flashback. It's going to be Battle and Jack Murdock is going to come home, and it's just like very clear that he's not thrilled because he knows what he has to do. He's going to have to take a dive. But hey, look, he's got like this awesome red robe and these shiny new boxing gloves and things are so cool. And we find out that the good thing about red is you can't tell how much you're bleeding, which I guess is
accurate.
Considering how often Matt Murdock's getting his ass kicked, I understand why he's going to get
something.
He's going to
be wearing red.
Yeah. You know, not just to honor his father, but also because
it all ties in. It's really laying the groundwork.
It's camouflage.
Yeah.
Blood camo. But this is where we get Matt saying to him, I think it's Jack first who says, well, we're Murdocks. We get hit a lot.
Yeah.
And Matt says, but we get up, right, Dad? We always get up. And that's where Jack seems to kind of have his epiphany of like, look how much like my kid is, you know, like worshiping me and like wants to see me succeed. And he always sees me fail. And like, is this the example that I want to be setting for him? So he decides to do something freaking stupid. Definitively, yes. Like,
yes.
Noble, sure. But this is like, he's already in so deep with these guys. Like, what does he expect? To the point that he calls the bookie. He says, change my bet, put all the money on me. And all the money that comes out of this, I want you to put into this account under my son's name. And you should lay low for a few days. And he even calls who I assume to be Matt's mother. Or some estranged relative, either way, so that will be able to take care of Matt once he's gone. It's like, please, like, I think that he's going to need you pretty soon if things go down the way that they're going to go. So he knows in doing this, I'm probably going to die or be forced into hiding or be in severely terrible shape. So why is he doing this?
I think he knows he's going to die, but he wants to give a good life for his son. I mean, he wants to set an example by winning that fight, you know, and he knew the only way he can do that is to betray these guys. And he took all the money and put it in Matt's account. Like, I think he knows he's going to die and he wants to make sure at the end of the day that his son's going to be taken care of because he's set to make a lot of money on those odds now. So I think that's why he did it. And like, it's like Mike in Breaking Bad, you know, you're doing bad things. He's like, but he's just taking care of his granddaughter at the end of the day.
No Breaking Bad spoilers.
Oh,
that's fine. Don't worry about it. That's not such a spoiler. But I guess. And I mean, it's canon. Battle Jack's gotta die. And I don't think anyone's gonna accuse him of being the brightest bulb in the bunch.
Well, what did he say? Like, Matt made the joke earlier. It's like, I'm gonna learn, you know, he's like, you're gonna learn to read Braille faster than I can read normal. He's like, I already do.
Yeah, that was good. I like that. We didn't talk about that. That was funny. So he is going to, he says, I want Maddie to hear people cheer for his old man just once.
Yeah, it's a great scene, a touching moment, And like I said, the show does a good job building up these two relationships. I'm very curious what happens now. I think they'll probably maybe have some flashbacks where he's still alive. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm very curious what they do with the dad now moving on. But they've done a great job establishing their relationship and that character and why we care about them.
Totally. So let's flash back to the present, and it's going to be Foggy and Karen just like drunkenly harassing the whatever building Murdoch lives in, because the neighbor is going to be the only one to hear it. Just like, stop.
We've all been there.
We've
before,
all been
right?
there. Yeah, yeah, sure. You since you were 6 years old. Drunk Kevin.
No.
no. But yeah, I love this. I just love them being like, Matt, it's me. Wake up, wake up, wake up.
It's Foggy. Come, yeah, come
it's
party
Foggy,
with us.
It's Karen. Come on, we're adorable together. People are shipping us.
Yeah, look at it.
We're Coggy.
We're very excited. Come check it out.
Yeah, come ship us. We drank the eel. And then I like how they're going to the fish market.
They're staying up all night and going to the fish market.
Yeah, they're going to the fish market. They're going to wait and go to the fish market. We're buying the Bluefin.
One New York adventure I did not do, and now I feel bad.
Yeah, you know, now I feel like I got to do it. I haven't done it. I got to buy the Bluefin. You got to buy the Bluefin. Well,
first, you have to drink the eel. So,
yeah, but of course, you know, Maddie's not home. He is out.
He's on a rooftop.
He is on a rooftop somewhere. But Foggy and Karen have been having a great night, and it's continuing. They don't have to be worried in Hell's Kitchen. I love just like the bravado too of Foggy. You're like, we're untouchable.
Yeah. We're totally safe. Nothing bad is happening. It's like, and you were just begging for
didn't
trouble.
Didn't you think that like something was
something? Was
I think
gonna
that they
happen.
Even they even have a guy who like comes into the frame and starts walking on the street, but goes the opposite way. And for me, it felt like
they're setting something up. Yeah, for
yeah.
Sure.
I thought that was happening, but in retrospect, I feel like it's kind of just like a sign of like it's that close.
Yeah,
like you're living in a place where it would be that quick. But yeah, it's just I thought I was gonna like this city will protect us. I love this town. You know, just like a total Ghostbusters moment. No, it was funny. I like that a lot. This is less funny, but more awesome is this scene on the rooftop that we've been waiting to get to, where Detective Foster, quote unquote, wakes up, is going to get terrorized and tortured by Matt, who's going to say, "Here's how this works. I'm asking the questions. You answer them. If you lie to me, trust that I will know, and I will be unhappy." That's the game we're playing. Yeah. It's a dangerous game.
It's a very easy rule. So,
yeah,
you know, very easy to understand.
Yeah. He says, "Where's the boy?" The guy says, "He's dead." He gets punched because Matt is a human lie detector and knows that he's lying. First off, that's good news. The boy's alive. The guy says, if he's not dead yet, he will be. He's like, why did you take the kid? He says, we took him to lure you out. And, you know, we're going to sell the kid like we sell all the others. And he gets punched again. He's like, I told you the truth.
I know. I love that. I love that he's just like, I know you did.
Yeah, that screws up the rules. Like, now the guy's just like, he's probably not going to even speak. He's like, you're just going to hit me for everything.
I think the ultimate rule is that I'm in control. Like, I feel like that's
the
ultimate.
And it doesn't matter because Matt Murdock can tell when you're truthing and lying. So there's that. And so he's asking, like, where's the boy? Where's the boy? And this is the holdout. Like, this is where he's not really going to answer. And he basically says, like, look, even if you kill me, somebody else is going to take my place. As long as people are buying people, we're going to keep selling. And there's really nothing you can do tonight that's going to change that. And this is like the moment. This is what Claire needed to hear. Claire, by the way, looking awesome with like
her all white outfit
and the mask. And I guess it's like sort of like the ninja suit version of the night nurse costume to a degree, I guess. Not that she has like a super crazy costume.
No, it was just kind of a nurse's outfit.
It was like a superheroed up nurse's outfit. But she, this is where she gets involved. She says to stab this guy right under the trigeminal nerve. I don't know what that is.
I'm not a doctor. I have no idea.
It's on your face.
Yeah.
It's near your eye. You stab there. It's like right above your eye, but under your eyebrow.
I can't imagine like right here or something. Like, ugh.
Yeah,
ugh.
I think it's like, it looks like a bad spot to get stabbed.
Yeah, yeah, it does. I'm poking myself there now and it hurts.
But
though.
she positions him basically with the knife, like go in there. And I assume this is still, is this still the vegetable knife?
Yeah.
So this is not like a quick and easy thing. It's gonna like take some effort to get in there. And like I thought it was a threat. Like I feel like you know, if this was, you know, if this was anything else, like, you know, if this was like a Marvel movie, like, I feel like he's not actually going to go through with this.
He'd or make
if
a he, movement.
If he does, like, it'll happen off screen. And like, this will be the thing that like convinces the guy to be like, okay, I'll talk. And no, he has to. He ends up having to do it.
Yeah.
He goes through with it. He pushes the thing through the guy's face.
It's intense and awesome.
It's intense. It's really crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that's what this... So, like, okay, that's what we're going to do on this show. We're going to shove vegetable knives through your trigeminal nerve, if I'm even saying that right.
Yeah, it's shocking. Like, it's interesting. I mean, we've talked about it over and over how this is... This is not what we expected from a Marvel show, but I think that's what's making it so great. It's just unexpected.
Yeah.
And they're doing something they don't normally do, and they're doing it well.
Yeah.
But that all said, like, oh my god, he's doing it. He's actually shoving that knife into that guy's face. Like, that's intense. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy. And you just, yeah, it is something to just, it's something you don't normally see your heroes doing, but that's kind of what separates, I guess, to a certain extent, these street level heroes and vigilantes to a certain extent. From
right.
your, you know, like Captain America and your Iron Man.
Right. And what's amazing is that this is not enough still to get the answer out of him.
Well, I mean, like, look at Vladimir Putin. Like, look how he runs that country, of course.
Yeah, I mean, like, this guy's he's really hardcore. He's withstanding that amount of pain. And it's not until Matt threatens to throw him over the side of the building and basically say, like, you're right, what I said before, if I kill you, someone's going to take your place. And sooner or later, one of them will tell me what I need to know. And so he's threatening to kill him. And he straight up says, like, I need you to know why I'm hurting you. It's not just about the boy. I'm doing this because I like it. Like, this is good.
I enjoy it.
I enjoy this.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. And he... finally gets the answer. He gets the answer to where this kid is. It's 11. Where is he? He actually says that. He says, where is he? Total Batman moment.
Yeah, they're allowed to have one or two.
Yeah, they've had at least two between the first episode and this. There's definitely some Batman call-outs going on here.
But in a good way.
No, it's fine. But he gets the answer. He's, you know, in this restaurant. He's underneath a restaurant, like a bunker or whatever, on 11th Avenue, 44th Street. Dangerous place right around there.
I think I'm going there.
No,
are you really? No.
I'm going there tonight. Are you buying people? Kevin's secret is out. But yeah, so he gives him the info, but then, like, freaking criminals, they're so dumb. Like, you're not dead, you got this wound to the face, you're lucky to be walking away from this situation. You had to keep talking.
Yeah, just like rubbing it in. That's
he's like, you know, they're gonna be waiting for you, and if you're lucky, they'll kill you before they kill the boy, because you're not gonna want to see that. And Daredevil's like, okay, so now I'm gonna throw you
off the building. He actually throws
him off the building. So I really did think that, like, before we find out, that he lands in the dumpster and lands well enough that he survives it. I thought that he had killed him.
Oh yeah.
And so can you remind me, and can you remind everybody who doesn't know Daredevil from the comics, what is his killing policy? Does Daredevil kill?
Daredevil, like, he does not like to kill. Like, he is one of the characters that can get violent and can get, you know, will beat people up. It's weird because, like, he will beat you to a pulp, but he won't really kill you. He doesn't like killing people. And he doesn't, I think, I mean, someone might correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't kill anything. Like, he doesn't kill. Like, he's never done it.
I feel like he may have in a certain run that I don't want to spoil in case people haven't read it, but I feel like, maybe he has, or has come close anyway.
Yeah, he's definitely come close.
But as a rule, typically.
Yeah, typically he does not kill. Which was a little surprising about that, because, like, in the movie, He kills people.
Yeah.
Like, he definitely does not hesitate.
Oh, yeah. He takes them to meet the sea train.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sea trains people. You know, he doesn't kill in the comics. And so for a second, it was like, did he just kill a guy?
But
Well, what do you think? Do you think that the Daredevil we're going to see on this show, is he ever going to kill somebody?
That is a very good question. I don't think so. I don't think he's going to. Like, I think... Marvel definitely has, like, characters in the movies and so far that have killed people, but I think they may avoid it for this. Like, he, you know, it's just, like, it's kind of, I think Marvel's embracing, like, what it means to be a hero these days and, like, you know, the non-killing policy.
Yeah, but if there's a place to embrace, you know, just being, like, a killing badass vigilante, it's probably this.
Yeah, but that's why, well, they have one. It's called The Punisher, so you don't want to make Daredevil.
Well, they haven't made a Punisher show. They're making a Daredevil show.
But I don't know. I think this is a chance to be, like, just because you could do it here doesn't mean you have to.
Well, then here's the other question. Did he throw this guy over the ledge knowing he would survive?
Yes. I can't say that with certainty. You know, I think he did, but then again, he was kind of like...
And how would he know? I mean, he's just like, from this fall and with your body weight and with the force that I will be...
It's a good thing that the dumpster...
I know that he's a very smart guy, but I don't know. Just food for thought. Maybe that's something we'll see.
It's true. He was kind of unconcerned when she was just like, oh my God, did you kill him? And then he like paused and be like...
Ermagerd.
He'll live.
You just killed him.
Yeah.
But no, he'll live. And because of that, he knows... this guy, when he wakes up, like, Claire, you should not be here.
Yeah.
He knew that you were lying before. He'll come back here. Do you have a place to stay? Turns out she does. He needs the address because he says, I feel like if I survive through the night, I'm going to need some help getting patched.
Yeah.
She's like, all right, sounds good. By the way, that thing you said about enjoying this, I don't buy it. I don't believe you. I kind of believe him.
I don't think he does. That's actually, you know, we talk about the difference between Batman and Daredevil. I think one of the differences is that Batman sort of enjoys what he does half the time. He enjoys putting fear into people. I don't think Daredevil is the type who, I mean, sure, he likes putting criminals away. It's what he wants to do. But I don't think he enjoys hurting them as much as he does.
You don't think he gets any kind of rush over being like, I can do all these super cool things?
Well, there's a rush, but also remember, and this is important, he is Catholic. And the Catholic guilt is a big thing. And I think that as a person who's religious as he is, causing that much pain, like, he feels penance he feels upset about taking pleasure from causing these pain into people. That's what part of what makes the character conflicted. And that, you know, like we said, it ties into the fact that he's religious. It's important for that character.
Yeah. Okay. Now, final flashback of the episode. It's going to be the death of Battling Jack. We are going to see that he kicked the crap out of Crusher Creel. He won. He shouldn't have. It was a mistake. And he's, you know, we see Matt watching it on TV and being really pumped up and
loving it.
And, you know, not for nothing, like, we see Battling Jack get his wish. Like, he hears people chanting, Murdoch, Murdoch. And even though I did criticize, like, I would have liked to have seen some of that fight, I think it's effective, the way that they shoot this with him, like, bursting into the locker room, really urgently trying to get out of there because he knows that, like, time is a factor.
Yeah.
He's going to have a chance here. And he hears, like, the chanting and he just, like, turns. He's like, oh, my God. They're saying my name.
And he takes it in because he knows what's coming real soon. You know,
which ends up being a gunshot.
Yeah.
I like the way that they did it too, with like his like eyes closing. It's like the noise of like the Murdoch, Murdoch, Murdoch. As that's like kind of washing over him. And then we cut back to Matt at his home. And you just hear the gunshot.
The gunshot cues you into that moment too, of Matt being at home.
Yeah, that was cool. It's like it's his Uncle Ben moment. It's his Thomas and Martha Wayne moment.
Yeah.
It's his transformative moment, is seeing, or not seeing, but apologies.
Oh, gosh.
but witnessing, you know, his father's, you know, dead body. Like encountering his father's dead body.
Yeah.
And that's heavily, heavily traumatic.
Yeah.
That is certainly going to clue you into like why a guy like this with the abilities he has is going to do what he can to use them to fight injustice.
Yeah, and I think it works really well. It's a very powerful scene. They, like I said, they did such a good job of building that relationship that when it happens, you feel like, oh man, you know, it's emotional. It has an impact.
Yeah. So let's go from that to, again, as we said, like not a huge action episode until the end.
This, I feel like...
Final 8 minutes.
Yeah, it was all like calm before the storm.
Yeah.
Like, and like they built it up when, you know, with the rooftop scene, and then it was like, oh, you know, it's, and then boom, storm hits, because that last action scene was incredible.
Yeah. You know, from the moment where the guard is bringing lunch to the kid, or dinner or whatever meal to the kid, who's been imprisoned there, and you don't even see the boy.
He steals his apple.
Yeah, he walks in with a lunch tray that has an apple on there. He walks out with the apple. What a jerk.
Yeah, you want to see these guys get their butts kicked.
Yeah, you want to see them get their butts kicked, and like it's a very deliberately paced scene,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well,
it's a straight shot, like a one shot. Yeah, one take.
It's made to look that way. It's definitely not. I mean, there's a lot of tricks in the way that it's edited and the way that it's shot that you can see where they built in outs for themselves. Like, the camera swoops into doors at certain points, like really dark doors, and as it's doing that, they can cut there and they can reset and redo things. And there's even times where, like, the camera is zooming into or, like, you know, like swooshing past some guy's like really dark shirt,
right?
And that's a very easy place to make a cut, because like just the black of the shirt is totally
either way holding it up. It was done incredibly well.
But like, they make it look like a one take, and the effect is very much there. And like the fact that it's not a pure one take is fine.
Yeah.
The idea behind it is epic.
It's great.
Really badass, and a really cool scene, and just like a real great testament to the fighting style of the show.
It's very reminiscent to me of the two famous scenes that come to mind, which is very similar, which is basically like a hallway fight scene, is Old Boy, where, you know, that
the hammer scene.
Yeah. And in the Raid 1, when he's going down a hallway fighting a group of people, like just straight down a hallway, and it's intense. And it's you really just, I talked about it before, with like you see him like, you know, struggling at times, and you see him like tired, and you really see that here. Like there's parts where he's punching people and he leans against a wall, like breathing heavily before he goes back in. And it's such a well done scene, and you really see him, his fighting style, and like, you know, it's really a brawl, and I think it's done so well. Like I plan on just rewatching that scene probably as soon as we're done.
It's gonna be a scene that is worthy of many rewatches, and it's exciting because this is episode 2.
It's episode 2, yeah.
So like, you know, there was already pretty good fight stuff in the first one, but this scene so far is, you know, the coolest fight scene we've seen, and it's episode 2. Really makes you want to just like watch the rest of them right
exactly.
now, so we can get more of that. But I'm kind of pumped that we're savoring the flavor, that we're going to be able to have like moments and really stop down and appreciate like
what was happening.
That was a really great moment back in episode 2. But yeah, it's a very cool scene. You know, like, and like, I love that. It's you know, obviously he's fairly resilient. He's more resilient than most normal people, and certainly these guys that he's up against. But he'll, like, you know, he'll run up a wall partially and come down and deliver a punch and a kick and all this stuff. He'll throw himself into bad guys, and he'll like drop himself, like he himself will be like, oh, this is hard work.
Yeah.
You know, like he himself is falling over and killing over. And I liked that about this scene. You know, we talked about how the fights in the first episode were kind of reminiscent of the Captain America Winter Soldier fight scenes to a degree. But at the same point, you know, there's something about this that I think is even more realistic to the idea of, like, you know, you punch somebody in the face and they are not just necessarily automatically going to go down.
Right.
Like, you're going to, like, keep hitting and hitting and hitting and hitting, and you yourself are going to be exhausted. And I felt like, granted, I haven't been in many fights, basically any fights. I'm a doughy peaceful boy, but you know, I feel like that's probably truer to the spirit of the reality of a situation. It's like, you're going to be tired, they are going to be tired, you're probably, especially in the condition that he's in, it doesn't matter how super powerful you are, like, you are roughed up, you are in bad shape, and you're not going to knock a guy out in a single punch. So I liked how it took its time. I like how it stopped down to show like Matt like heaving and sighing and having to catch his energy and his breath. And then at the end of it, him being so energized by everything that he did that he could pick up the kid and walk out of there.
Yeah, and I think that's also just internal strength, you know, not just, you know, it's realizing he did it and he's rescuing this kid, and also having to, you know, have face with this kid to show like, oh, you know, it's okay, you know, and not like crawling over to him like, it's okay, kid, like, I gotcha, you know. But yeah, I think if you compare like Matt, at the end of the day, yeah, he has senses, you know, super senses, but he doesn't have super strength or anything. Cap is, you know, he has a super soldier serum in him. He can hit harder than most people. Matt is a strong dude. He's just your average strong guy, though, so he's not going to be able to just lay someone out
Is like there anything that about him that would make him heal faster than anybody else?
No, not that I know of. So, he heals like a normal person.
So he's running on adrenaline.
Yes, 100%. And that's what makes the character fascinating and awesome and interesting, is that you're seeing this just regular guy. It's kind of like what people like Batman. He's supposed to be like a regular dude, but Batman is like the perfect regular dude. Like, right. He's the epitome of what people can become. Matt isn't there. Matt is more like regular people than Batman is, and I think that's what makes him awesome.
Yeah.
And that scene really solidified it.
Does he take his mask off before he goes in to see the kid?
Yeah, like, I think to catch his breath and like to have a moment of just like...
But does he put it back on before he goes in?
I think so.
Or does he show his face to this kid?
I'm gonna have to rewatch that moment, because I think he may have put it back on, but maybe you're right. Maybe.
Well, I guess. Well,
honestly, though,
we'll probably find out soon.
The smart thing is to show his face to the kid, because the kid can see something like a regular first person's face and see sincerity or whatever.
Not smart if you're trying to preserve your secret identity.
I mean, that kid was like 6.
I guess. It's probably not gonna wreck.
And probably drunk. No.
Probably drunk, like Kevin. Drunk Kevin. Drunk 6-year-old Kevin is my favorite Kevin.
Does that exist?
No, it does not exist. All right. So let's, anything else about the episode? I think we covered it.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it was great. Just the show continues to amp up, and I cannot wait for the next one.
All right, so let's talk about the next one. What do you think we'll see? I'll start. We still have not seen Wilson Fisk.
Yeah, we didn't even really see him mentioned in this one.
The thing that Netflix does is, like, when the credits start to roll, like, kind of pops up what the next episode looks like, and I thought that I saw Vincent D'Onofrio's,
yeah, I think so,
as, like, the photo that we're shown for the next episode, so I assume we're finally getting some Kingpin,
which will be an episode pretty great,
but pretty awesome that we're talking about this show so highly already. We haven't even seen Kingpin yet,
yeah.
And people who have watched the show already and had watched the show before it landed had been raving about him. So I'm excited.
I'm very pumped. We're loving the show, and it's tip of the iceberg. Still.
Yeah. Do you think we'll get any Kroggy action?
Probably. I'm curious to see some Moggy, if any. Or nope, wait, not Moggy. Marin.
Marin. Yeah, heck, I would see some Moggy.
Just all of them. Again, their chemistry between all three of those actors is great. So
I'm sure that there are a lot of people who'd be into Moggy, and I'll sign off. I'm in. I would see it. I would watch it. All right. So I think that's gonna do it for us. Reach out to Kevin on Twitter. What is your Twitter handle, Kevin?
It's at Kev Mahadeo. That's KevMahadeo.
All right. And I'm at Round Howard, like Ron Howard, but rounder. And if you got to the end of this podcast, hit us up with hashtag Kroggy. Kroggy. Just let us know what you're thinking of Daredevil so far, what you're thinking of the podcasts, and we'll be back soon with episode 3. We'll get into this as soon as humanly possible. Again, Kevin in the middle of a move, so we're trying to keep this train running as quickly as we can and as on time as we can, but just forgive us any hiccups that do come up. But I think that we should be okay with episode 3 at least. All right, I'm really excited to get into this. Talk to you tomorrow, Kevin.
Yep.
All right. Bye, guys.